Welcome to the 'Cause I Love You podcast, a series of conversations designed to convene faith, civic, and nonprofit leaders in and around Colorado Springs. We want to foster greater collaboration between faith and civic partners so the church can be our city's greatest contributor towards human flourishing. Each month, we explore topics and struggles impacting people in the Pikes Peak region and connect you to the leaders that are working to end suffering and increase flourishing.
Well, hello, 'Cause I Love You friends, fans, and followers. Welcome to another episode of the 'Cause I Love You podcast. It is August 2022, and I can't even believe that I'm saying that. I mean, this year has absolutely flown by. It's been an incredible year. It's been a full year, and I cannot go any farther in this 'Cause I Love You podcast without introducing my trusty sidekick. And I shouldn't even really call you a sidekick, Corey. I mean, there's too much.
I'm Robin.
You do too much.
Oh, wow.
Corey Smith, everybody.
Hey.
Welcome.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the 'Cause I Love You podcast. Yeah.
These are such fun conversations. And here we are. Actually, we're coming out of this city series that we've now done for a few months. And I thought that was really fascinating.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Not necessarily everybody's cup of tea. I'll acknowledge that. But I think the fact that we get to humanize and introduce some of these people who have such a great role in our city, but we don't always know who they are or what they do. It's kind of fascinating.
It was. And I loved learning about some of the roles that maybe I'd heard about but didn't know what they did.
Yeah.
City clerk. Fascinating.
Yep.
Loved it. Well, today we are talking to some educators in our city. We're talking to Connor Bodwin, the assistant principal at Sierra High School, and Principal Tony Carr at Holmes Middle School. Stu, what are you excited about in this conversation?
I mean, education is always evolving, and I know that we're going to talk with these two guys about this in the conversation, but it is so, in some ways, fascinating, and in some ways, daunting, I guess, is the word that I think of, about the rate of change in education. And I mean, everything has changed, like marketplace has changed, everything's changed in the last couple of years, but nothing more than education, I think. Yeah. So to just talk with these guys about what are the real challenges that they face, what's happening in our schools. I mean, we know a lot because we talk with educators quite a bit, but to try and maybe educate our community about what's happening in education, I think it's just an important conversation, and especially right now as we get started for another school year.
So true.
Yeah.
Well, we're excited to talk to these phenomenal leaders, men of character that are serving students and families here in the Pikes Peak region. Listeners, we hope you enjoy.
Well, welcome, friends, to another fascinating conversation here on the 'Cause I Love You podcast. After diverging really a bit over the last few months on our city series, we're getting back to the core purpose for these conversations, which is to connect you to both needs and opportunities in and around the Pikes Peak region, and as well as organizations that you can come alongside who are doing good work in those areas. So if you've been tracking with this podcast, you may recall an episode we did back in the fall of 2021 on education. It's actually episode number 6, if you're keeping track. 'Cause I Love You had already been building a platform to engage community partners in supporting local schools prior to the impact of COVID. But man, the rate of change in our education system over the past 2+ years means that we have to just continue to come back to this conversation and this topic very regularly. So today I have with me two local school leaders to talk about what's changed just in this last year, what some of the hidden challenges are, and maybe what opportunities they present for us to come alongside what might be the most important challenge that we currently face in our community. First is Connor Bodwin, who's the assistant principal at Sierra High School, located in the southeast part of our city, one of the main high schools in Harrison School District 2. Connor, after working together a bit over the last couple of years, I really am thrilled to welcome you to the podcast. It's great to have you here.
Thank you. I feel honored. I'm glad we were able to make it work.
Well, thanks. Me too. Our second guest is someone that we've worked with over the past few years. He's Tony Carr, the principal at Holmes Middle School on the west side of Colorado Springs in School District 11. Tony's a big believer in community partnerships. That's something that he and I have talked about a lot in education, and one of the many reasons why I enjoy conversations with him. Tony, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Stu. It's good to be here.
Great to have you here. So let me just say a couple things to start this conversation. First, I just want to acknowledge that we here at 'Cause I Love You are breaking gender stereotypes all over the place with this podcast. We recently did an episode focusing on city and county officials in which we interviewed two high-powered female leaders in our city. And here we are talking about education with two phenomenal male educators. And I know that you guys are in maybe a female-dominated profession, perhaps. And just really great to have both of you guys here. We need more of you. And it's such a joy for me to see two very capable professional men choosing to invest in education, educating our future generations. So thank you, gentlemen. And second, Tony, I was driving down the road recently, and I saw a bumper sticker that read, Tony Carr for President.
It's actually spelled the way I spell my name, too.
Is that not a Holmes Middle School? Is that not a Holmes Middle School bumper sticker?
No, the middle school students didn't make that up.
No?
No, that's been around for a little while. I honestly cannot take any credit for that, and I don't think anybody at my school can either. I have no idea of the origins.
Well, what a coincidence. No doubt. I mean, a fantastic coincidence. I mean, I got to say, I think you're the first guest on our podcast to have their own bumper sticker.
Yeah.
So, that's way cool. to go.
I agree.
Well, friends, before we get into this conversation, just tell us about yourselves. Tony, let's start with you. How long have you been in education? What's your current role? And tell us a little bit about Holmes Middle School.
So I've been in education for my entire professional career, and this is going on, I believe, 20 years, starting the 20th year in education this upcoming school year.
Wow. And
the last 10 of those years have been in school administration, everything from a dean of students to assistant principal, then now principal for the last 5 years. Taught previous to that around the state. So a little bit of mix in my teaching career from school districts with relative affluence and upper middle class white populations to school districts with the opposite side of the spectrum, mm-hmm. predominant migrant families, minority, lower socioeconomic populations as well.
And I think Holmes might be one of, if not the most economically polarized schools in our city. Is it fair to say something?
I do believe that. Yeah, I think Holmes, in terms of where our demographic sits, the socioeconomic diversity is really where it's at. Mm-hmm. And we have everything from upper middle class, mountain mm-hmm. shadows, neighborhoods,
Kissing Camels families,
Pleasant Valley families to the opposite side. Mm-hmm. Very low socioeconomic families experiencing high degrees of poverty and trauma on a regular basis.
Yeah. Yeah. What a story. So Connor, how about you? Tell us how you got into education just a bit, and maybe how long you've been at Sierra, and a little bit about Sierra High School.
Yeah, no. So my story, definitely, it's kind of one of those, it runs in the family. Going back as far as my grandfather taught for an extended period of time. My mother was a preschool teacher for over 25 years. My aunt has taught, and I have cousins that are in administration and things. So it was definitely a topic at the dinner table, often the importance of education. And so went to school at University of Wisconsin, go Badgers. And, you know, that work really prepared me.
And we got to stop you right there because I was going to say we got Wisconsin on one side of the table and Minnesota on the other. It might be good that there's a table in between you guys.
Mississippi River divide.
Yeah. I mean, we got to draw a line somewhere, right? And so that really prepared me to work with, you know, high minority, low socioeconomic status. And so coming out of school, got hooked up with D2 here on the southeast side of Colorado Springs. And I've been there for about 8 years now. So teaching 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th English, and working with our ESL or ELL population. And then started at Atlas and was there for 4 years. And I've been at Sierra for four. And this is about my third as an administrator.
Yeah, that's really great. So guys, let's start pretty high level here. Anyone who has kids or is connected to anyone who has school age kids, which is pretty much everybody, is aware that our education system has undergone huge changes over the last 2 years. But I mean, it hasn't happened all at once. Some did, but there have been kind of these iterations of change, and the changes continue to evolve or unfold. So in my observation, there's really two types of challenges that have come along. There's kind of these brand new challenges, like delivering quality education over a virtual platform to young students. And then there's ones that were already there, but maybe were just exacerbated by some of the issues that we faced recently. So I think of students facing hunger or abuse at home as an example. I mean, things, they were already there, but now they've just been highlighted because of some of what's happened in our country and really around the world. So let's start with the first group, maybe some new challenges that you've had to take on that weren't present before. What are some of the most significant challenges that you and your colleagues have had to adapt to in the past few years or so?
Obviously, pivoting on a dime in the spring of 2020, going from an instructional model, an educational system that was based entirely on in-person kids in seats, teacher in front of them, to the virtual pandemic learning models that we had to do, was an exceptional challenge. And it took a toll on the entire system, students, families included. That was new. Another new thing that I think it does dovetail into the second part, Stu, but I think it's new in the sense that the volume of and intensity of those pre-existing conditions or pre-existing factors is new. I think that's a new strain on the educational system. Mm. And by volume and intensity, I mean there are more students that are presenting or behaviors manifesting because of those issues. So there's a greater volume in that regard, and there's a higher level of intensity with those increased numbers, a higher level of intensity of those issues like drug abuse, alcohol abuse amongst school age kids, a greater level of intensity with risk factors associated with suicidal ideation. Those intensities have increased. Yeah. It's new. It's a strain on the system.
Yeah. And it's something that you guys as educators are on the front lines of, and it's finding its way into the classroom every day.
Yes. Yeah. Those, what happens in the community is inevitably inside the school walls. Mm-hmm.
Yep, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head. The easy answers you brought up, Stu, was, you know, adjusting to that loss of seat time, whether it was fully virtual or hybrid or something, that's the easy answer. But I think it's really shed a light on some of the things that have already been there. Some of those gaps in educational inequities, right? And like, it can be as simple as access to resources that were there during the pandemic that are no longer there. You know, a lot of our families were looking to that government funding to help them get through some tough times, and a lot of that just isn't there anymore. And so while those inequities have certainly been there and have a history rooted in education, I think it's really a spotlight has been thrown on them. And 100% agree with the mental health and focus on social emotional learning. But we're also seeing, you know, an increased community concern about access to like dangerous weapons that students and student age children really, you know, have access to.
Yeah, that's a definite, that I put that under the intensity of the issue.
Yeah.
When we're talking about dealing with weapons and threats of school violence at the level that we are, volume and intensity.
Mm. So, I mean, with some of these, again, you've already kind of gone where I was going anyway, new challenges as well as pre-existing ones that are, again, just becoming more exaggerated. I mean, we'll get into some of those in a minute, but what are some of the things that, again, as a principal, as an AP, that you guys have been doing to try and address these things? How are you working with your teams, your educators, even down into your families to try and address some of this? Not even solve it, because, I mean, that's a whole nother level of challenge, right? But, I mean, to just acknowledge it and address it together. How are you guys trying to do some of this work?
So something that we're really excited about in D2, from started in the 2020-21 year, we actually formed an equity council. I talked about in that last answer how the pandemic has really shed a light on some of those educational inequities.
And if I could stop you right there, like, paint that picture. Tell us more about what you mean when you say that, if you can, the educational inequities.
Yeah, so I think it was something that started at the district level with Dr. Berhansel, our superintendent, Dr. Claudio, Ms. Rachel Lawfer as well. The conversation, I think it typically falls in, should we have an equity council or kind of an individual that represents and takes on those challenges? And I think it started there first and foremost. It's such an awesome responsibility. It's too big for one person to kind of shoulder. And so our district started off by deciding we want to have a council. We want to bring people in from the district building to admin, to teachers. And so they sent out an application process to the district, and you kind of had to be vetted a little bit to figure out if you were right for the council. And so it's made up of 14 members. As I said, we started in the 2020, 2021, and the first year was really grounding ourselves in you know, what are our core beliefs? What do we believe educational equity looks like? And then we actually were able to partner with the Western Educational Equity Assistance Center, specifically with Dr. Darlene Sampson, who really kind of helped us ground ourselves even further. You know, we said taking an equity breath, because you put a bunch of type A personalities in one room and, you know, you want to fix it as quickly as possible. But we know this is an ongoing thing that is going to take continuous efforts of, you know, identifying some of those educational barriers and continuously working to remove them. And so that has been, I think, one of the bigger things that D2 is doing, really looking into, we kind of have a phrase of you got to own your ugly a little bit, because we dove into the data and we saw that some of our Black and Brown students were being highlighted in discipline at disproportionate rates. And that, you know, just grounded us in this work matters. And so having that support from the top of the district is so helpful. But that's been something to look at, you know, what does our numbers say? What does the data say? And what can we do to remove as many educational barriers for our students on the Southeast side?
Yeah. I want to ask both of you guys a little bit, maybe Tony first, about kind of this virtual vacillation, where you're kind of going back and forth between virtual and in-person. You guys were forced to go all virtual for a while, and then it was kind of trying to return to some sort of in-person, face-to-face. I mean, educators, which we get a chance to work with a lot of them, right? They're not in it for the money. They want to be in relationship with students. I mean, they want to see students succeed. They want to see them, you know, move on in their education, but it's a part of a relationship that they want to have. And that's really difficult to accomplish if it's just a person on a screen. And now you guys are forced to kind of do both.
Yeah.
How are you guys doing that?
I think some of that has shifted through this 21-22 school year, to where now a lot of the system, I'll speak to D11, worked to create for families that wanted to have full online environments, that they were able to access those. Mm-hmm. So 21-22 school year really shifted away from going through that back and forth environment, mm-hmm. which was very difficult to develop relationship. It's part of why the current best research available right now is the academic loss, the learning loss is upwards of like 5 months on average across the nation because of that back and forth hybrid virtual type process that we had to go through in the 2021 school year. Mm-hmm. I think most school districts had shifted this last school year, 21-22, to providing choice on if families want a full remote opportunity or some kind of version of a full remote, then we see the value of that from the pandemic, and we're going to work to create and make that happen. D11 specifically did that.
Listeners, we're going to pause in the middle of this episode and bring you some important information about some upcoming events with 'Cause I Love You that we would love to invite you to. First, coming up this August is our citywide worship gathering. Now, this is really exciting because we're actually hosting the citywide worship gathering outside this year. So join us on Friday, August 19th at America the Beautiful Park from 5 p.m. to 7:30 and enjoy a time of worship. Come at 5, get some dinner at local food trucks, spend time with your families, bring a blanket, and then join us for a united night of worship, prayer, confession, and communion. We would love to have you. Again, that's August 19th from 5 to 7:30 p.m. If you come at 5, from 5 to 6, we'll have food trucks available. Come and enjoy dinner and then join us for the event itself, the citywide worship gathering at America the Beautiful Park. Now, if that wasn't enough, we actually have a citywide opportunity to serve coming up this fall. City Serve Day is coming up on Saturday, October 1st. We invite you, your friends, your family, your coworkers to come out and serve the Pikes Peak region, meeting tangible needs with no strings attached. We plan it, you show up and serve, and hopefully you'll make a connection with a project, a nonprofit, a school that you can go back to and serve throughout the year. We invite you to mark your calendar. Saturday, October 1st, City Serve is just around the corner.
moving from there into kind of what you were talking about with the social behavioral issues, the social emotional learning stuff, Connor, that you were referring to, the mental health issues that have been more present at your schools. Just help us put a finger on the pulse of your average educator who's in a classroom working with students, and this stuff is now more present than it's ever been, and their job is to try and teach freshman math.
I spoke with a group of concerned citizens, I guess is the best way to describe it, back in the winter, some kind of time frame like that. And the question of burnout, you know, why are teachers burned out to such a degree? Why is there like this mass exodus of people leaving the profession? And to try and pinpoint that is exceptionally challenging. Mm-hmm. But what I frame it into is not necessarily a burnout. And this came from another teacher that was also speaking to this group. And I agree wholesale. Burnout would say that you're done. You're completely over it. You're cooked. Whereas the term disenfranchised or demoralized with the system is a little bit more appropriate.
Wow.
And demoralized because none of us that go through an education prep system or program are trained as counselors.
Yeah.
We're trained to do reading, writing, math, and teach.
Yeah.
Whatever the subject is, that's what we're trained to do.
But now your educators are being expected to be social workers, crisis interventionists, first responders, as well as teachers.
Trying to do reading, writing, arithmetic. And it's demoralizing because we don't give, you have to have a master's degree in public health or counseling in order to, you know, really meet the needs of kids in the classroom. If you're going to do that as a teacher and do that in any kind of real meaningful way, we can do little things with PD and trauma responsive classroom. And, you know, kudos to Harrison taking on a system-wide approach to equity, but those things start to just kind of take chunks out of the iceberg instead of really tackling the iceberg.
Yeah.
And we really need to give teachers more training, and teachers, the expectation on them is different and it's demoralizing.
Connor, anything you'd add to that?
Yeah. I mean, I think the first thing that comes to mind is just in education specifically post-pandemic, we've talked about trauma, right? Like the kids went through this traumatic experience and, you know, it's showing its way in a multitude of avenues, but it was traumatic for everyone. I mean, teachers included. And I think they get put on the back burner a little bit. You know, it's, you talked about that fluidity of in-person versus fully remote versus hybrid. And I mean, even going from, you know, the age of black screens, right? Of like the camera's not on, nobody's talking. Hello, is anyone there?
Yeah.
To, you know, chatty classrooms where kids are craving that. So to jump back in with all of those same responsibilities that like you said, you know, you have to have all of those hats. And at the end of the day, I still got to teach them how to read. Exactly. And the hats, I think it was so quick and the responsibilities came back so quickly. That you're right. Burnout is not always an accurate term. It's I don't know. I'm hearing teachers say, I don't know what to do. Like I don't. And so, you know, the importance of setting healthy boundaries, even like with teachers, we push that a lot of you went through this as well. Like, what are you doing for you? Yeah. What are you doing to recharge your batteries? Because if they're not their best self, then, you know, it's going to show in the classroom. And so it's been traumatic for all involved. And it's, you're right. You have to have like 5 degrees to really, be prepared to take on the challenges that kids are bringing.
I like the way you talked about, at the beginning is kind of like, what are we doing to provide care for the caregivers?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And yes, everybody needs to be focused on their own personal well-being and awareness of what they do to be well. But care for the caregivers and compassion fatigue.
Well, I think one of the things that we focused on a lot, as you both know, we have, you know, really tried hard to develop a platform for community partners, churches, businesses, other organizations to come alongside schools. And one of the things that we've heard from principals and from administrators all over the community is help us just keep teachers in the building. Because the research would say, and I mean, I've read this research for myself, that teacher retention is a direct contributor to student success On the other side of the coin, teacher turnover is a direct contributor to student failure. And so we've focused a lot of our efforts on just coming around the school to just encourage and support and try to help the principal's efforts to keep teachers in the building, because if we can do nothing else, then at least the community and a team of partners around the school could at least help in that effort. We might not be able to educate the kids, because that's your guys' background, but we can at least try to do what we can, because right now, as you said, there are so many who are feeling done. Disenfranchised is a great word for it. And so I think some of this can seem really overwhelming, and I know it's been overwhelming to you guys. I mean, I remember seeing you and I met halfway through this last school year, and I could see the look on your face. I think you're right. And it's funny now, but it wasn't funny then, I can remember. But as we kind of guide this conversation towards what can be done, I'd like to ask you guys maybe to just take a long view. So there are certainly things that can be done this coming year, but we're not going to solve all of this in a month, or even a semester, or perhaps even in a school year. But from the seats that you two occupy, how do we chart a path forward that helps students find success, that helps families get the support that they need, and that also helps alleviate some of the strain on our educational system? What does that look like?
I mean, the first thing that comes to mind for me really is we got to create avenues for community members, students, staff to voice concerns, because we at times live a little bit in a microcosm within our school where we're constantly putting out fires and, you know, creating initiatives to address barriers that we know our kids in those four walls are facing. But we need to hear from community members and from students and from staff of, you know, talk to us. What is it that you're seeing from your end? And what do we need to tackle head on? So I think incorporating voice is always going to be a big one. And it goes to organizations like 'Cause I Love You, utilizing community resources, because there are so many people that are like actively wanting to contribute or give back, but might not know how to or might not know what avenue. And we mentioned earlier providing options, because from the pandemic, we saw there were students that did not do well in that online setting, and there are kids that actually did thrive, and that kind of self-paced and can go at it at their own rate was very beneficial. So whether it's in person versus not in person, or even, you know, the option of CTE and getting into the trades, or, you know, having kids be able to earn an associate's before they graduate from high school, like a concurrent enrollment program. So I think providing those options, and you got to be adaptable. And the only way you're going to be able to adapt is to hear it from the source, which is going to be the students. It's going to be teachers. It's going to be community members.
So I look at this through two different buckets. One bucket is an advocacy type way to support, and the other bucket is really the more functional. And I'll start with the second one. The more functional way to support and help this process, I think, really is engaging with the model, Stu, that 'Cause I Love You does, or with school wraparound support teams. And if every school in School District 11 or every school in the Pikes Peak region can have that support team model that comes in and collaborates on a very open but very direct basis with the school leadership and the school staff and parents in that community, those things make a big difference. And I can say with confidence and certainty that they made a big difference at my school. Specifically the last school year. And I'd be remiss if I didn't thank the efforts of that school support team for what they did and what volunteers did in our school this last year.
Yeah, that's amazing.
From the advocacy side, and that other bucket, we really need, as a community, as a state, to figure out this resource issue, to figure out how to recruit and retain educators in a better way. How to train. And if we're not going to train teachers to wear those five hats, to have a master's degree in everything, then we need resources in the school with people that can do those things. I'll say specifically the state of Colorado significantly underfunds and resources public education.
Yep. And for those of you who are listening, if you're unaware of some of those statistics, just go out and look around at some of the statistics of the rate of pay in Colorado compared to the national averages
for teachers. The funding per pupil is at and below the average, but way below the national average, and very oftentimes, depending on the metric or the group that did the analysis, anywhere from 45th to 50th mm-hmm. in the nation.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So advocating to public leaders for how we're going to provide resources directly to the school system.
So that's really good. And you guys are already kind of, you know where I'm going here, because this is exactly what I wanted to get into, because perhaps some of those things, Tony, that you're talking about are only things that can be handled at a policy level, you know, passing bond issues, creating some other kind of infrastructure that your average community member, even if they're a voter, they may or may not be able to influence. But we can't necessarily, in other words, like neighbors can't raise teacher pay, but they can perhaps like volunteer their time. So there's kind of this both and approach. Maybe there are some things that your average neighbor or your business down the road or the church that's up the street or across town could do that would work towards a better future in our schools. And you've already kind of hinted at that, but what are some of those things that you would point just your average community member, your neighbor, your business owner or nonprofit group, what would you point them towards as ways that they could come around the school that's down the road or the families that are there or the educators that are in the building?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first thing that comes to mind is being just an active member, and I think of that community, and that can look a lot of different ways. I think there's even a kind of a taboo of like, I have to have a kid at that school or in that school district currently to really be a member of it. It could be something as simple as going and attending a board meeting for the, you know, the school district that you live in, or, you know, attending a basketball game to show support. And, you know, those start to build those relationships with which then leads to dialogue around, you know, what can I do to help? What opportunities are there? And then, you know, once that communication begins, it's great. And Sierra being on the southeast side, we consider ourselves a community school. And so whether it's, you know, providing time or resources, it can look a lot of different ways. But a big thing we say is advocate for the good that you know is happening in your community.
That's good.
Because we really talk about changing the narrative of the southeast side of Colorado mm-hmm. Springs, mm-hmm. Because unfortunately we see our students get unfair and untrue biases and stereotypes placed on them. And so be willing to share the positive of the southeast side of Colorado Springs, because it's we've got amazing kids that are doing amazing things. We have amazing community members and businesses that are looking to build up that part of town.
Yeah, you're hinting at what's called an asset-based approach, right? Which is really starting to see perhaps, you know, as opposed to seeing a part of town as under-resourced, at risk, et cetera, is starting to see like what are the assets that exist there? What are the positive things that could be built upon that need to just be catalyzed in order to make it better, as opposed to a problem-based approach where it's like we ought to point out all the gaps and all the deficiencies and see what we can do. So I appreciate that approach. Tony, anything you'd add to that?
Yeah, I think a concerned citizen gather... A very concrete way to do this is gather up as many people as possible in your faith-based organization within your colleague group, and as many people as possible come up with, hey, we want to give back. Here is exactly how much time we can dedicate to something, and name it. Name that very concrete amount of time. And then go to the school. Go to the school and say, hey, I've got five people that can dedicate 2 hours a week. What can the school use us for? And if I had somebody walk in like that, you know,
yep.
We're taking advantage of it.
Yeah.
We're going to find a way to utilize people that are dedicated on a regular basis.
Yeah.
It's really good. It's an invaluable opportunity to take advantage of, you know, City Serve Day and mm-hmm, things like that mm-hmm, and doing those mm-hmm. projects. And we've done City Serve at Holmes 2 years in a row now.
Yeah.
But the most bang for the buck that I get is that regular ongoing volunteer support.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's if you're from a church, you're listening to this, or even a business or some other organization, I think the tendency is to hear that and say, gosh, I don't have a bunch of people that can offer that. But my counsel to them is that it doesn't need a bunch. Two, four. Yeah. a handful of people that can just on a regular basis come in on every week or maybe every other week, a couple times a month, just come in and say, what can I do today? Makes a huge difference. And it doesn't need to be an army. It just needs to be a few willing people who can be consistent with their time. Yeah, that's really good. I mean, guys, I could have this conversation for a long time. There's so much more that I could ask. Just in the interest of time, I want to kind of start to kind of steer us towards the wrap up of our conversation. So let me just ask you this. As you both come into the 2022-23 school year, could you just tell us about two things? One, what problem keeps you up at night that you know you're going to encounter this year, wondering how you're going to address it or handle it? But two, what are you really excited about that you think maybe could be a game changer for you, for your school, for your team, your colleagues this year?
I think the problem that is keeping me up at night right now is filling our vacancies, is figuring out how we're going to have all of our teachers hired. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Staff support and resources is the struggle during the summer months. Mm. During the school year, I think what will probably keep me up at night is the volume and intensity starting to go down? Are we having enough of a meaningful impact focusing on what we control inside the school walls, with targeted improvement plans and things like that? Are those having an impact and bringing down the volume and intensity?
Yeah.
I'm most hopeful then for that, that the work that we did this year, the really good things with our community support team, the really good things that we've tried, some learning, some very successfully, mm-hmm. implementing that in a more strategic way is going to bring down the volume and intensity.
Mm. Yeah, that's good.
And I'm hopeful for that.
Yeah. Connor?
So definitely, I think the thing that's going to keep me up, one of the awesome structures that we have at Sierra is that an assistant principal and a counselor will loop with grades freshman year through senior year to really build those relationships up and get to know them. And so this past year, I was with juniors, and so my juniors are now going to be seniors. So dragging some to the finish line, throwing some over the shoulder, some just clapping and snapping along. I think getting through year two now, getting them to the finish line. But as we mentioned earlier, you know, just really being prepared to take on some of those gaps that have shown themselves post-pandemic. And again, it's multifaceted. Some kids are coming in grade levels behind. You know, what can we do to try to make up some of that gap as quickly as possible? How do we provide that social development in a healthy way, social emotional learning, things like mm-hmm. that? So balancing all of that is definitely something that's going to keep me up many nights. Mm. But I think the thing that I'm most excited about is the D2 community has been amazing, and we recently passed a bond. And so this summer at Sierra, we started our first year of bond construction, which this summer will include a completely renovated library, which we're kind of deeming our learning commons to take on a kind of a collegiate feel, where we're an avid school. So to do tutorials and a real space for kids to go and really help close some of those gaps. And then at the same time, we're kind of renewing one of our wings that is going to be dedicated to CTE, or that career and technical education. So, you know, providing a space that has nursing bays to get kids exposure to that. If they want to be an EMT or a physical therapist, or they want to get into communication. So just really bolstering those options that we can give kids, because we want them to be able to experiment, because we know that by the time they're 18, they're, a lot of them don't know what they want to do, and that's completely normal and fine.
Yeah, that's good. So I was going to ask you a few more questions. I think we've kind of run out of time here, so let me just kind of say this. I think for any of you who are listening and you've heard some of the challenges that these two colleagues, and they're representative of so many more in our community, if you've heard some of this and you've thought, gosh, where could I start? What could I do? Let me just encourage you with what you've got, a handful of minutes, a handful of hours, a little bit of time, just show up and ask the question, is there something I can do to help? We've encountered neighbors at 'Cause I Love You who show up every week to the teacher's lounge with fresh made cookies or with coffee, just because it's the one thing that they can do. They live a few blocks down the street. We've got plenty of others who do all kinds of other things, physical property upgrades, just teacher encouragement support, or just, can I just sit down and meet with a handful of kids who are having the toughest time catching up to reading grade level? Any of those things, some are hard, some are simple, just show up, right? Just show up and do something that's helpful. And so let me just say, Connor and Tony, I mean, you guys are two of many educators in our community that I think perhaps, I think have some of the most important jobs out there. And that's raising up our next generation of workers, leaders, parents, employees, and employers, and citizens. If it were up to me, I think I'd advocate for higher pay for all of our teachers, because I'm just not sure that there is a more important role in our community. So I just want to say thanks. I can't do a lot of those things, but I can just say thank you. You guys are doing a lot, and I know it's been so challenging these last couple of years. I'm thankful for what you do and that you do it with so much love and care for the students that you lead. And if you're listening to this, I hope you've paid attention to what these two have said, and I hope that you maybe very sincerely give thought to how you can get involved at the local school. You may be part of a company, a nonprofit organization, or just a group of friends or neighbors. You might even just be a stay-at-home parent. And I'm convinced that there is a way for anyone to be a servant in helpful, practical ways at any school nearby, and it's never been more needed. So these are your future neighbors, your future employees, your future community leaders, and let's work together to make sure that they have what they need to become the right kind of citizens. And if you're looking for ideas and ways to get involved in a local school, please reach out to us at 'Cause I Love You. We've invested a lot of time and resources into helping organizations of all kinds find ways to be helpful and supportive to a local school. It's not hard, but it does take some time and intentionality, and we want to do everything that we can to help. Connor, Tony, thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I want you to know that you got a whole community of people listening to this podcast and beyond that love our educators. We're here for you, and we look forward to be a part of your school and your community in this coming year.
Absolutely. I'm excited to have you.
Well, thanks,
guys.
Come
on through.
All right. Thanks again for those of you joining us in this conversation on another episode of the 'Cause I Love You podcast, and we will see you next month.
Well, that was an amazing conversation between Principal Tony and Assistant Principal Connor. Stu, I feel really encouraged by hearing about their leadership and the way that they serve their schools, and also equally challenged. I want to ask you, what did you take away from that conversation?
Yeah, when we were opening up this episode, I mentioned the word daunting, and it does seem like an extraordinarily daunting task that our educators have in front of them to try and just keep kids on an educational track that can prepare them for their future, but also address so many real issues that are landing on their doorstep every single day.
So true.
Yeah.
I think Principal Tony shared that academic loss is up by 5 months. So students have lost 5 months of their education in the midst of the back and forth of being in the classroom and not being in the classroom. And that's a lot of time to make up, not to mention that they might have been in environments that were less healthy. So there's just so much to consider as students get back into the classroom this year.
Yeah, I mean, especially when you consider the fact that it has already become difficult for students to stay on track and on time. And, you know, for somebody who's maybe unaware, I guess, about the educational system, you know, it really is difficult to make up lost time when everything's normal.
Right.
Because there's already plenty to get through. And now we're talking about adding on basically another half of a school year to try and catch up on. I mean, frankly, I'm just not sure how that happens. And that has a very real effect on kids' futures, on their preparedness for when they graduate from high school, if they get a chance to. And for some, that's a very real distinct possibility that they just might never get caught up.
Yeah.
And that has some long-term consequences on the future of their family or their household or their careers, all those things. That's a very daunting task. So again, that's the word that stands out to me.
Yeah.
So
that's very true. Well, we have a guest with us, Stu. Would you like to introduce her?
We do. I am so excited to introduce so many of you to somebody that you, I'm sure, are aware of some of her work, even though you've never actually heard her voice on this podcast. Gina Schmidt is the newest member of the 'Cause I Love You staff team. We are so excited to welcome you. Gina is the project coordinator for all of the things that we do with our schools program. Gina, introduce yourself to our friends here at the 'Cause I Love You podcast.
Yeah, well, my name is Gina, and I've been saying I'm new to the team, but it's been a year now.
It has been.
True.
Yeah. Happy first year.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a huge gift to me, so I'm just glad to be here. So part of my role at 'Cause I Love You, my main role and how I spend most of my time, is bringing community members around schools. And so I feel like I have the greatest job that doesn't really feel like a job. I get to bring people who care about schools to schools. Mm. So it's really a gift to me.
Which is exactly why we're having you on this particular episode. So I know, I mean, you got a chance to listen in on the conversation that we had with Connor and with Tony. Anything that stood out to you in particular, especially given the fact that you spend so much of your time thinking about rallying support around our schools?
Sure. Well, there are a couple of things. One thing is to advocate for the good you know is happening. Mm. So we hear a lot of the challenges of schools, but there are so many good things happening. Yeah. And that's been really eye-opening for me. I get to spend my days seeing some of those good things happening and also being an active member. Some of the things we do at schools are difficult. It takes a lot of money, but most of the things you can do are very, very simple, like chalking the sidewalks. You belong here. We're glad you're here. Welcome to our school. Mm-hmm. Or taking coffee. Maybe you own a coffee shop and you can take coffee or provide a day where teachers can come for get coffee for free. It's not hard stuff.
Yeah.
I want to use Gina as an example really quickly. You live near Foothills Elementary, very near Foothills Elementary. And you also are passionate about yoga. That's something that you're trained in. You have a certification in. And you actually go to Foothills and teach a yoga class for the teachers and staff, don't you?
Yes. Yeah. So it's one of the highlights of my week. I get to go and just say, hey, I'm going to be here. If you want to come, you know, come hang out with us and do yoga. And when I approached the principals about this, I said, hey, I have this thing. I don't know if it's something that your staff would want at all. And they said, you know what? On Thursdays, right after school, we've been watching a yoga video, turning the lights down in the gym and doing yoga. We would love a real person.
Wow. Wow.
Like, hey, I'll show up and be your real person. Yeah. Just doing what I love doing.
So not outside of your role at Cause I Love You, you're also as an individual taking stock of what you have to offer.
As a neighbor. Yeah.
As a neighbor. Yeah. And you're offering this thing that you're passionate about and just saying, if you want it, it's yours. I think your role is amazing, but then also the way that you're demonstrating that personally is powerful.
Yeah. So if you're a community member, if you are working with an organization of any kind and you think you want to have something to be able to offer to the community, doesn't have to be a bunch of time. It doesn't have to be a bunch of money. It can just be something that you have at your disposal, coffee, teaching a yoga class, whatever that might be. There's never been a better opportunity for you to come alongside and meet a need by jumping in at a local school. And Gina would love to talk to you more about that. If you've been interested in this conversation, we would love for you to just rate it, like it. You can pass it along to somebody who may be interested in themselves. There's a little button at the bottom of your screen that'll kind of give you the opportunity to share this podcast. Send it to somebody, maybe even somebody outside the Pikes Peak region who in their own community might have something to offer to a school in their own neighborhood somewhere. So we are so thankful for you here at the 'Cause I Love You podcast. We're so thankful that we have this growing listenership that continues to want to lean into good things happening in our city. Take it seriously, take your part seriously, and we look forward to seeing you next month on the 'Cause I Love You podcast.